This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed, located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our special guest is Brad Rex. Brad is president and CEO of Foundation Partners Group, a funeral home and cemetery company with 46 locations throughout the United States. Prior to this president and CEO position, Brad was CEO of the Brad Rex Group, a management consulting company focused on creating outstanding guest service, operational efficiency, and successful growth strategies. Here are a few fun facts about Brad. Brad has served as chief customer officer for Hilton Grand Vacations, a division of Hilton Hotels Corporation. Brad led Disney's Epcot theme park for 5 years through the aftermath of 9/11. He graduated from the United States Naval Academy. Brad has had a marketing, sales, and financial role with British Petroleum Company in the United States and London, England. He has been a nuclear submarine officer with a ballistic missile submarine, where he spent a year of his life underwater. That's right, a year of his life underwater. Brad graduated from the Harvard Business School in the top 10% of his class. In today's podcast, we'll be focusing on Brad's experiences at Walt Disney World, as well as his book, The Surpassing Life, 52 Practical Ways to Achieve Personal Excellence. This is actually Brad's second appearance in a Chasing Wisdom podcast, and I'm honored to have him returning to our studio. You may remember Brad's very popular first podcast, Wise Leaders Know an Act of God. Brad, welcome to the studio.
Well, thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you back here again today. We'd like to share a little bit with our listeners about your experiences at Disney first, and then we'll move in to more about your book and how those two fit together with some scenarios from Disney intermixing with the book itself. Tell us a little bit about Epcot and the service there at Disney after that 9/11 fiasco and how that impacted the company.
Well, Sam, it was really interesting. I was named to lead Epcot in August of 2001, and my first full week started on September 10th. And so I had never run a Disney theme park before, and here I find myself on September 11th in the command center, closing down the park for the first time in history with people in it.
Wow.
Kind of a funny story about that. I didn't even know where the command center was. And I had to ask somebody, you know, excuse me, where is the command center? but it was amazing to see. And what happened then, we were very concerned, frankly, that people might stampede towards the exits and be injured.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about it and said, well, how can we do this safely? And we used the best technique we had, and that is our cast members. Our cast members were absolutely amazing. We passed the word and said, please tell the guests, due to a national incident, Epcot is closing early today, and proceed to the exit. And our cast members did that. And one thing I'll always vividly remember is, without being told, our cast members went and lined the promenade and smiled and waved goodbye to the guests as they were leaving.
Wow, wow.
And they wanted that final memory of Epcot before the guests went back into this really cold, cruel reality to be smiling, waving cast members.
That 9/11 experience was very powerful for everyone. I remember I was in a classroom teaching an MBA course in organizational behavior. And we took a break, and nobody came back. Everybody was down in the lobby watching the video of what had happened.
Yep.
And it was a very, very powerful event. You actually transferred from finance to operations while at Disney, which is a it sounds like just three words, from to, but when you think about it, going from finance to operations, hugely different. What kind of training experiences did you go through for that move?
Well, it was actually fairly unusual at Disney at the time to do something like that. Now, it's been more common more recently, but I went to Lee Cockrell, who at that time was the executive vice president of operations for Walt Disney World, and I said, Lee, I'm interested in getting into operations because of my Navy background and just more of a general management role. And he said, well, you know, I would welcome you to do that, but you really need to learn how we do operations here. And so I want you to do a training program where you actually get in costume and do the roles across all of Walt Disney World. And so I had the opportunity for about a year, year and a half, to do 50 different roles across Walt Disney World in different locations. And so, for example, I was a custodian at the Magic Kingdom. I made beds at the Grand Floridian. I cleaned the broiler in the quick service restaurants. I did nighttime maintenance. I mean, just an incredible array of experiences that really taught me a lot about what it's like to be a frontline cast member and also to develop great relationships with a number of the best cast members in the world.
And that job rotation gives you insight that you can't get from a book anyplace.
Absolutely. And so when I took over at Epcot, it gave me great insight into what we needed to do and how we needed to change. And also, again, a number of the people I had met through that process were great advocates and helped me.
And an interesting thing about the training, and then we'll move into your book, is the costumes that you wore. You went through an array of costumes also to get an idea of what goes on in the parks.
Well, again, at Disney, you wear costumes instead of uniforms. And so I got to, you know, be in all the different costumes. But I think also what you may be referring to was in different leadership roles. Mm. I would put on different costumes. And so I was a surfer dude. I was a pirate. I dressed up even one time as a ladybug. And but it was a lot of fun. And it also, you know, kind of showed, look, you know, we want to have fun here. We want to do things right. And as the leader, you need to set the example and be willing to do that sort of thing in a leadership role.
I'm sitting here trying to visualize you dressed up like Santa's elf. I don't know how that would work.
I had the ears as well, so.
You had the ears as well. Let's shift now into your book. Tell us why you wrote this book. It's called 52 Practical Ways to Achieve Personal Success. That's actually the subtitle. Mm-hmm. And the main title is The Surpassing Life.
Right. Well, I really wrote it for my children to kind of give them all the mistakes that I had made and to help them to not make those mistakes and to learn from it. Also, when I was doing public speaking, people would come up to me after I would speak and say, where can I get your book? Hmm. And I'm kind of like, well, I don't have a book. And they're like, what do you mean you don't have a book? And so I had the opportunity. It took me about a year to write everything down and capture it. It helped me a great deal, and I really encourage people to write down their stories and to author a book, because each of us has such amazing stories that we've experienced.
One of the reasons that I really wanted to get you back here, and I'm so pleased that you could come as a guest, has to do with the practical focus of your book and how there are 52 ways, steps that people can take to try to build this surpassing life. And not only the content is good, but you have two features at the end of each chapter, one called action points and one called payoffs, kind of plans for people to put into action what you talk about. What is a surpassing life? That's the main title of the book. What is a surpassing life?
Well, I would say if you look at it, most people live, frankly, a mediocre life. It's kind of an average life, get by day to day. And there's just so much more available to people, and that's what I wanted them to have. And so I wanted to provide some direction, some guidance to have really an excellent, fulfilling life and to work towards something greater than what they may be achieving today. And so, as you point out, I wanted to not only provide inspiring stories, but also some very practical ways that you can improve your life today and your leadership. And so, as you point out, in each chapter, and they're short chapters, two or three pages, and so the idea is you don't have to read the book all the way through. You can kind of pick and choose, and each chapter has a couple of kind of interesting or quotes at the beginning, the content of the chapter, and then, as you point out, some action steps that you can specifically take in that area.
Well, you talk about themes in the book and themes of a surpassing life, and it kind of reminds me of the YMCA's theme of mind, body, and spirit, and putting those things together in moving forward to build a surpassing life. There are biblical themes that you talk about in the book. Tell us about your view of the Bible, the Bible's contents, and what it has to do with surpassing life.
Well, I frequently get the question when I speak, what leadership book should I read? What's the best leadership book out there? Mm-hmm. And my answer is always the Bible. Because if you want to be a leader and if you want to have this surpassing life, there is so much wisdom. And once again, Sam, I really recognize, you know, your choice of words in Chasing Wisdom. There's so much wisdom in there about how to lead your life and how to be a great leader. And it's not just the wisdom of the words, but the stories of the people and each person in there and the mistakes that people make. And so if you want to improve your life, you want to improve your leadership, I really suggest that daily reading from the Bible and studying it and understanding how the Bible can help you change your life.
Let's go through a few of the main points of some of the chapters and to kind of illustrate not only what the book is about, but to give some practical views on what people might do. And I'm thinking that we could start really with chapter 3, which is rich rewards, and relating to generosity. How does that fit into the idea of a surpassing life and becoming a wiser leader?
Well, it's so interesting because culturally, we often don't recognize the value of generosity. And in fact, it's, you know, accumulate, get as big of a bank account as you can, and let everybody fend for themselves. The Bible and the book talks specifically about the opposite of that, and the rich rewards that come from being a generous person. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how you can be a more generous person, how you can be a wise, generous person. So not just to throw money at people, but to actually get involved in organizations and understand how the money's being spent and then participate in that and feel the blessings that come out of that. And that's what I want people to really understand is, you know, you're not giving away something, you're investing it. And you receive incredible blessings back for that.
And that's a very powerful statement. It's not giving away, it's investing. And we have a feature called Sunday to Monday that you know about from your last podcast and has to do with a message you might hear on a Sunday that you could take into your work life and use in a powerful way. And one of the passages that sparked in my mind as I read about this generosity issue comes from Proverbs 24 and 25, but the issue is one person gives freely, yet gains more. Another withholds unduly, but becomes poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. That's the theme of what you're talking about. How does this theme fit into payoff in an organization? Mm-hmm. We're all trying to be successful leaders in organizations. And this kind of says what you give away, you're going to get back. How does that work?
Well, we've heard the term servant leadership. And I think that's really what servant leadership is all about. As a leader, you give away yourself to others. You give away your time. You give away your knowledge. You want to see others succeed. And as you get that reputation of being a leader who wants to see the people who work for him or her succeed, great people want to work for you. And so you get this virtuous cycle of you attract great people and then they come and you teach them and they grow and they teach you and you become a better leader. And so it creates this very positive organization. And you contrast that with the what I would call the stingy leader, who is all about themselves, who does not give themselves away. And nobody wants to work for somebody like that.
Right, right.
So you're not going to attract great people.
And in essence, you're building your human assets because you're training, you're developing, you're encouraging. And people appreciate that because that's right in their wheelhouse. That's what they want to do. They want to do the same kind of thing, and you're molding those relationships to make a more powerful organization. You also bring up the idea in here of exercise. And I know that there's a quote by Thomas Jefferson that says, "The sovereign invigorator of the body is exercise. And of all the exercises, walking is the best." Why is exercise related to being a successful leader?
Well, as a leader, your energy is critically important to the energy of the organization. And there's a quote, Lee Iacocca, "The speed of the leader sets the speed of the team."
I like that.
And so if you aren't physically capable, then you can absolutely limit your team. Being a leader is a high-stress, very demanding role, and so you have to take great physical care of yourself so that you can meet the demands of that role. You know, as an example, when we were talking about Epcot, I don't know how many miles I would walk, you know, every day around Epcot, and to have the physical energy to do that was critically important. So I believe that leaders have to have the physical energy, have to have the mental capacity, and always be learning, always be developing, have to have relational capability to have great relationships with people, and then have to have that spiritual grounding for the resilience that's required when tough things happen. And if you're in a leadership role, tough things are going to happen to you or to the people who work for you. So you have to have that resilience.
Awesome. The spiritual foundation is critical. And yet we need to keep our tool, which is our body, honed to use it in a very powerful way. It's time for our pearl of wisdom. And that's the thought that you would like to leave with somebody here at the end that will help them and something they can think about in terms of, am I doing this as a leader to help myself become wiser and more successful? What would that thought be, Brad?
Well, I have 52 ways in my book to achieve, but I'll give you five, and kind of what are the top five things to do to lead a surpassing life. And I would say the first is have a plan. Have a plan for your money, for your health, for your work, for your family. The second is focus on relationships. You know, we hear the story, you don't take anything with you to heaven. Well, that's not really true.
Right.
You take your relationships, and relationships are critically important. The third is to be a constant learner. You know, read. And in the book I talk about how do you have the time to do that. I give you a way to do that. The fourth is to be humble. And that is a challenge I would submit for many leaders. But pride and arrogance are going to derail your career and your life. And there's a chapter called Humble Success that deals with that. And then finally, you know, and I'll put a plug in here, read the book.
Read the book.
Read the book, because it provides encouragement for you and ways to make your life easier and create a surpassing life.
Tell us a little bit more about, and I like all of those steps, tell us a little bit more about humility versus pride and arrogance and how that can derail a career, how pride and arrogance derail careers. In the opposite of that, humility build careers.
Sure.
Can you put that in perspective?
Absolutely.
Bit?
I mean, there's I talk about different pride derailers, but let me just, you know, pick on a couple of them. So one is not willing to accept feedback, not looking for honest feedback. And the higher up you rise in an organization, the harder it is to get honest feedback. And so you have to actually go out and seek it. And I talk about the best question ever, which is, what is the one thing I can do better? And I recommend to leaders that they always ask that question of the people who work for them. So that says, look, I want to be humble, I want to do better, I want to learn, and that's critically important. But again, the different things, you know, personal competitiveness can derail you. The thought that I'm infallible will derail you. There's a number of different ways that you can really mess up your life. And when you derail on character, it's a mess for yourself, for your family, for your company, and even for entire communities.
Terrific advice. People can get your book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the online stores, but maybe the best place to buy it is your website, thesurpassinglife.com. And people can also sign up for materials that you send periodically to help them lead this surpassing life and build it in. Brad, I hate to say this, but time is up here. Thank you so much for being here today. You can find Brad on LinkedIn by searching for Brad Rex or at thesurpassinglife.com. That's one word, thesurpassinglife.com. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom or my website, chasewisdom.com. See you next Wednesday. In the meantime, remember to keep chasing. Thanks, Brad, for being here.
Thank you so much, Sam.
God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.